Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our weekly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien, and this week we're going to do a special episode where we'll take a behind-the-scenes look at some of the work going on here at Semantic and find out what it's like to work as an engineer in cybersecurity. We spoke to three Semantic engineers, all of whom work in Semantic Security Response, the division tasked with investigating and responding to new threats and ensuring that Semantic products will protect our customers against those threats. Our three engineers have quite different roles within Security Response. They've all followed quite different paths into the world of cybersecurity, and they're all at different stages of their careers here at Semantic. But what they have in common is an infectious enthusiasm for their work and an abiding fascination with how the threat landscape is evolving and what they can do to help us better react to new threats and protect our customers. They'll give us an insight into the tools they use and the skills they've developed to grow as engineers. And despite filling very different roles, some common themes emerge. They all speak about how their jobs are continuously evolving. As the sheer volume of threats that Semantic has to guard against grows exponentially, the focus is shifting towards automation and artificial intelligence, helping create innovative solutions that allow us to work faster and smarter in guarding our customers. The first person we spoke to was Sayeli Kulkarni, who works on a team that is very much on the front line in the daily battle against newly emerging threats.
My name is Sayeli Kulkarni. I am Senior Software Engineer in Semantic Security Response, like our STAR division. My team role is basically to analyze the malware and to, you know, help to create the protection against it. We involved into the more of automation process. Like, as we know that the customer FP submission or FN submissions or customer submission has been increased over the years, and we have to cope up with that submission rate. So it is very important to automate this process as possible. So my main duties are to automate the whole malware analysis process and, you know, to with the different technologies included, like applied machine learning or data analysis techniques. And another aim of my team is to increase the efficacy of the existing techniques. That's all about it, you know, in the brief, that basically we are the response engineer, but are also focused into more of automation and data analysis, finding the relationship between all this data we gather.
Sayeli became interested in computer science while she was still at school, but it was her first encounter with malware while she was in university that piqued her interest in cybersecurity.
I was always interested in science, like every other students was fascinated about it. So I chose the science stream in high school, and which got me interested to do some engineering, you know. So I decided to do like computer engineering after when I finished my high school. And then I got an admission into the, you know, engineering school in Pune, where I have learned my foundation of computer science. To my first experience, you know, got me interested in cybersecurity is like maybe most of the students has experienced it. And as a college student, we used to give exchange the USB drives for copying the assignments or maybe sometime movies, you know, like XYZ things. But when you do copy a USB drive, you know, I used one time on my personal computer, and one day I noticed there was like something wrong. Like when I put my, you know, the drive in, and the only thing I was able to see was the replications of folders and folders and folders inside the folders and so on. So I didn't know what was happening, you know, so I started to deleting them or maybe just to kill the process from task manager. But the infection was still there. Like whenever I restart my computer, I was able to see that. So eventually I had to install the antivirus software to protect my computer. And that was the actual, you know, thing made me to interest in cybersecurity.
Sayeli started working for Semantic shortly after graduating. It was, to some extent, a step into the unknown, but the job exposed her to lots of different aspects of the work that we do here at Semantic. And as she built her skill set, she developed a passion for her work and started to conduct her own research.
So after I got my computer science degree, Symantec started recruiting for junior level positions in Pune. And after a series of interviews, I received an offer. Now, when I joined Symantec, it actually changed the whole view of computer engineering. Like in the sense where when I came to Symantec, it was like at the same time, my friends got a job in different software companies in information technology. They were more interested into the database administrator or developer, testers or network engineer. You know what I mean? Like it was like a different. And when I came and joined Symantec, the second day, my hiring manager came to my desk and gave me the big books of assembly language and, you know, and start asking me to debug the assembly code. So like knowing the assembly language from my bachelor course were like made things definitely easier, but I was like really not sure where I was choosing the right field. But you know, like eventually I gave myself a chance to understand the scope of this field by reading the blogs or even working with the senior members in the team, you know, discussing the information with them, current threat landscape, and which made me interested at the end, you know, that no, this is something different, but it is like more in it. I should just keep going and exploring things, you know. And at the start, I worked on a lot of different things. I trained as a response engineer and then moved on customer submission of false negative for a while, and then moved on false positive analysis process where we developed the, you know, like a generic whitelisting process or some, you know, like in a, to achieve the bigger goal rather than the smaller single goal. So while doing that, I always wanted to do my own research. So I started to do in-depth analysis of malware in my own time or after the office, you know. And one of that was like, and then one of my senior engineers said that if you do that, just start publishing the papers or submitting the abstracts. Why not? You know, you submit, you know, like spending so much time on it. So, you know, like I started submitting these abstracts, and in 2014, the Virus Bulletin conference accepted one of my abstract, and I flew to Seattle to present my first international conference, you know, like in a paper. And you know, basically it's kind of a big deal for me, the whole thing. Like I don't remember much, but from Pune, I think I was the first woman to go there and present at the stage. So it actually was like boosted the confidence that, you know, I can do that. I can just do that. So that's how actually, you know, like in a journey in Symantec started.
As Sayeli explains, presenting at Virus Bulletin was a key moment in her career and prompted her to start thinking about the next step in that career. And that step brought her to the other side of the world, to the Symantec Security Response Lab in Dublin. Her job has also changed a lot, becoming less about analysing single pieces of malware and more about developing and managing automated systems.
The trip definitely was like, everybody has a turning point in the life, but the trip was a turning point in my life, which really boosted my confidence. So when I came back to Pune, I felt it. I actually should be doing something more. I can do it more. So I can push myself to achieve more goals and solve the bigger problems. So when there was a position open in Symantec Dublin, I decided to apply here. Again, after a series of interviews by hiring manager at Dublin location, they finally, of months of patience, they gave me offer to join here in Dublin. So from since August 2015, I'm working in Dublin Security Response Lab, and my role was changed from doing the single turn file analysis to automating the whole detection process using sophisticated techniques such as machine learning or even drawing the relationship between different, you know, threads. So we have achieved a sustainable goal over the years, and as we develop those systems, now we own them because we are at the end we are response engineer. So we now, our job is to like to own those systems, maintain those systems, and even in the meantime increase the efficacy, parallelly increase the efficacy of the system. So these days my job is to make sure the system is up and running because customers are submitting your files or you have to provide the protection 24/7. So make sure the system is running. Design the scales of, scaling them like horizontally. Develop the whole infrastructure as a core to maintain less maintenance. And at the same time, make sure we add the new machine learning models to tackle this new trend landscape.
As her career has developed, Sally's interest in broadening her skills and expanding her qualifications hasn't abated. That's led her to continue her studies alongside her work, this time in Dublin.
When I came to Dublin, I gave myself a year with this beautiful rainy weather to settle down with it. And definitely the work, it's a kind of a difference. Definitely Pune was my hometown, so it was a little bit easier. So it's just like getting settled down with the weather and the work and the home. But the next year, when I got a chance, I enrolled myself to do master's degree of digital investigation and computing science from the University College Dublin. So now I actually completed my a master's. My results just came out last week. I'm really happy. And now I'm just waiting for my graduation ceremony in December. So it's something that actually everybody's happy, like my family and friends, that, after 6 years of break, I did it.
As Sayali mentioned earlier, when she went to Virus Bulletin in 2014, she was the first female engineer from Pune to present at the conference. However, she's one of a growing number of women working in engineering roles in cybersecurity, and she's hoping that this trend will help inspire more women to pursue a career in cybersecurity.
There are a lot of women working in technology now, which is really, really good to see. However, in cybersecurity, the ratio of women is still a little bit lower than what you see in the other areas of technology. Maybe the affection of being developer or QA engineer or database administrator. But things are starting to change. When I joined in Pune, there was only a couple of women in the department of around 50 engineers. Now the ratio has increased and I see more women are taking interest in cybersecurity. Like I have seen in even my master's that a lot of young girls and young women were there, and it's good to see it. So hopefully with more women in working in cybersecurity now, we will lead an example and inspire more women to work here.
The next person we spoke to was Eric Chen. Eric is a Symantec Fellow and Vice President and is one of the company's most experienced engineers. He started working here in 1996, and as he explains, the engineer's job was a little different then compared to now.
Yeah, so when I started in 1996, I was fundamentally doing the same thing I'm doing today, which was analyzing viruses. But back then, the problem or the threat landscape was completely different. Just to give you some sense, I mean, first of all, we were looking at DOS viruses back then. Windows had barely existed. People really weren't on the internet. Mostly folks on the internet were college students who had sort of mainframe accounts and could send sort of basic text emails back then. And so the biggest problem we had were these sort of DOS viruses that would spread on 3.25 or 5.5-inch floppy disks. And so what would happen actually is people would send us floppy disks through postal mail. And we would receive these floppy disks, usually with sort of handwritten letters and people saying, I think I might have a virus. Can you look at my floppy disks for me? And a person would basically triage those floppy disks. So basically it was kind of like a mailroom person. And and she, at the time, her name was Sharon Lee, and she would basically receive these postal mails, open up each of these envelopes, read the letters, figure out if, oh yeah, this looks like someone maybe thinks they're infected, and would put those handwritten letters and floppy disks in manila folders and put them in literal in trays, those in and out plastic trays that people used to have at their desks or maybe still do today. And we'll put them in these in trays. And we would get maybe four or five of these floppy disks a week, okay? And to give you just some context, today we receive 1 million new samples every single day. And back then, we were receiving 4 or 5 a week. And so we would go by her cube, you know, every day, maybe around lunchtime to see, oh, did a new floppy disk show up today? And some days there was, and some days there wasn't. And we would basically fight over who got to look at these floppy disks. And so, you know, we would analyze these floppy disks, and, you know, most of the time people didn't have any infections. Sometimes they did, and that was really interesting and exciting. And often we would call these customers back directly. So if they wrote us this handwritten letter and had a phone number, we would just pick up our phone and tell them, hey, I'm looking at your floppy disk today. You know, what was it that you saw? You know, why did you think you were infected? And maybe have a chat with them and get some additional context. And if it turned out they were infected, we would write a signature, a definition to protect them and detect this new virus. And then Sherry Lee would basically build those new definitions, put those new definitions back onto floppy disks. And those definitions might fit on 1 or 2 floppy disks, and then FedEx them back to the customer so they could update their computer. So that's what it was like, you know, 20-odd years ago.
One of the biggest step changes in the industry came with the mass adoption of the internet. This sudden increase in connectivity led to a parallel increase in malicious activity.
Yeah, the big change was really the advent of the internet. When the general public began to get on to email, primarily in the U.S. at that time through AOL, America Online, which was a big sort of internet provider for home users and business users, I guess. When people really got on the internet, we saw a bit of a shift towards Windows as well, to Windows 3.1 and then later to Windows 95 and 98. That's when we saw a big shift, because it was no longer people just, you know, using DOS and you know, handing floppy disks back and forth between people. Now things could spread, you know, in an instant just via the internet. And you had this sort of global worldwide ability for threats to spread. You know, when you talk about floppy disks, in order for it to spread, you got to hand it to your friend. They got it infected, then you got to wait until they copy something on a floppy disk and hand it to some other person they know. And so transmission rates were very low. As soon as the internet became prevalent and email especially became prevalent, you could have a threat go from one side of the world to the other in seconds and to thousands or tens of thousands of people overnight.
While the days of receiving floppy disks in the mail are long gone, the job has not changed entirely. Many of the skills required in 1996 are still required today. What has changed is the sheer scale of the work.
Yeah, you know, the core fundamental skill is still the same. You know, it's what we call reverse engineering or disassembling programs. So back then, you know, you had to be focused on something called 16-bit x86 assembly. And today, it's really just 32-bit x86 assembly. So it's not that much different. It's a bit more complex, the number of instructions you have to understand or look at, the assemblies, you know, instructions that you have to look at are a bit more complicated today. They're generated not by hand. You know, the attackers back then would write their viruses in assembly by hand. Today, they use high-level languages like C or C-sharp or Java or things like this. And when those get compiled down, the assembly or the bytecode can be a bit more convoluted because they're not constructed by hand. That core, you know, sort of skill set is definitely still in play with reverse engineers and analysts today. However, on top of that, there's a huge number of additional skill sets that are required. And the biggest, you know, example is when you go from 4 or 5 new viruses every single week to 1 million a day, there's no way you hand analyze all of those. You know, we hand analyze a portion of those, but a huge portion are handled via automation. And a lot of that automation is basically machine learning. So, you know, you can't have humans go through 1 million samples, but computers and machines can be programmed to do exactly the same thing at that scale.
With so much talk of automation and the move to machine learning, will there be any role for engineers in cybersecurity going forward? As Eric explains, engineers are needed now just as much as ever. Improved automation means that they can focus their attention on the most important work.
There's always going to be some manual reverse engineering in order to generate, as you described, these sorts of automations or programs. You know, there will always be some anomaly or outlier, the one brand new crazy thing that no one has ever seen before, And maybe a machine can't even understand because it hasn't been programmed or learned or trained to understand that new, you know, threat. So there will always be, you know, some manual analysis, but the amount of manual analysis cannot keep up with the quantity today. You know, I would say that today we do, if you take the collective hours of engineers spent doing manual analysis, it's far greater. You know, it's orders of magnitude greater than what we were doing in the past, right? But the amount of threats that we have today is, you know, far, far, far greater, you know, going from 4 or 5 a week to 1 million a day. And so for that reason, obviously, now you have people spending, you know, many, many hours working on things like, you know, artificial intelligence in order to understand and find these things before they happen.
Throughout his career in Symantec, Eric has worked on a lot of different cybersecurity threats, but the most interesting ones for him have been the game changers.
Clearly, Stuxnet is probably the most challenging threat that I've ever worked on. It was a threat that was likely created by a nation state to cause damage to Iran's centrifuges that were trying to produce uranium for their nuclear program. But, you know, there's also other few notables, I would have to say. You know, Code Red was a super interesting threat at the time because, again, it sort of changed the landscape. You know, all the threats, I guess, that were interesting to me were threats that sort of changed the landscape. You know, Stuxnet changed the landscape because it was the first threat that had real-world effects, you know, was causing real-world physical damage. It wasn't just trying to, for example, steal, you know, digital zeros and ones off your computer, you know, literally causing centrifuges to fall apart. You know, another example that came to mind was Code Red, and Code Red transformed how threats spread. It combined an exploit at that time, something that basically allowed it to run without you having to do anything. So before that time, we were seeing a lot of email worms and threats. So you had to check your email, double click on them. And even things had, you know, the ability to spread quickly, it still required a human to do so. If no one checked their email that day, the threat wasn't going to spread. And Code Red was one of the first that had the ability to autonomously spread by itself. Your computer just had to be online and powered up, and then it could jump to your computer automatically. And so the speed of spread with Code Red was so fast and so enormous that it really changed the landscape as well. Another sort of good example of how things changed. And then before that as well, there was a threat called Explorer Zip as well, which shifted things. I mean, really hit business users really hard in the way it worked by going after file shares, which we hadn't seen previous to that. And then that was quite interesting as well. So, you know, there's a number of threats that were super interesting, and all of them were interesting, less because of, you know, their zeros and ones inside of themselves, and more because they really shifted how the landscape worked. They weren't just, you know, sort of evolutions. They were sort of revolutions on what the attackers were doing at that time.
The last engineer we spoke to was Connor Murray, who works on our quality assurance, or QA, team. QA is a key component in any engineering project, but in cybersecurity it is doubly so. We're not only responsible for our own software functions, but also for how it interacts with every other file on a customer's computer. False positives, where a legitimate file is flagged as malicious, or false negatives, where a malicious file is flagged as legitimate, can both have serious consequences for customers.
Hi there, I'm Connor Murray. I'm currently a principal software engineer with Symantec Security Response. These days I'm the product owner for our team, Content Compliance Automation Engineering. We're essentially responsible for building automation systems to improve the ability for teams around us to process and visualize their work end-to-end in an efficient manner.
Prior to joining Symantec, Connor hadn't really considered a career in cybersecurity. However, 14 years later, he hasn't looked back.
Well, I kind of fell into Symantec. I studied computer science in UCD, and when I left it was just after the Y2K in 2001. I joined Aer Lingus as an IT auditor and worked there for about 3.5 years, so I was there during the 9/11 period, which was particularly awful. I was looking to move on from Aer Lingus and came across the job posting. I wasn't particularly interested in it initially because I wanted to get into sysadmin and networking and had gone for a few jobs in the Dublin, but was unsuccessful at the time. But the job position was still there a month later. So I decided to apply to it because it was close to where I lived. And that was really the primary reason for me going for the job. I said, sure, I'll stay around here for a while if I get the job and then move on to something else. And that was in 2004. When I initially joined, I was working on a project called Eraser. Back then, we were starting to see the proliferation of adware and spyware and dialers and so on. You know, basically be browsing somewhere and you inadvertently install something via drive-by installation. All of a sudden you'd end up with new toolbars on your browser or ad pop-ups on your desktop that were really annoying. So I was involved in testing a feature in the product that would be able to remove these annoying elements by trying to clean up the computer. We had to install the offending threats in a safe environment and try to remove them using the product feature itself. Essentially, we'd be evaluating the ability of the product to do so and then provide feedback on the required change that had to be made in order to improve the product feature. I then moved on to an operational security role as a quality assurance supervisor. And our team would be responsible for evaluating and ensuring that content was fit for purpose before release to customers. So what do I mean by content? Well, we'd be testing things like the antivirus definitions that get released to customers. I mean, if an analyst added a detection, let's say Trojan horse for a particular file, we really need to make sure it's detected as Trojan horse and not something else, or even worse, not at all. During my time at Symantec, I've been able to continuously train up. I've gotten a Cisco CCNA while here. I've gone on to do a master's at Trinity in Management Information Systems. I've done the CISSP. I've done a Lean Six Sigma. I've also done various agile training on Scrum and Kanban. You're definitely encouraged to learn and supported in it as well in this place.
Connor now works as a product owner for our content compliance automation engineering team. Much of his role involves coming up with new and innovative ways for handling the QA team's increased workflow.
My current role is as a product owner for our team. I'm responsible for working with the stakeholders to understand their requirements and then working with the development team to ensure we're actually able to implement and deliver the required features. These days, automating the process flow end-to-end is a very important element of what we're trying to achieve. There's really so much involved on a daily basis that it's not possible for a human to be able to quality assure or check everything. We find that we are involved in business process re-engineering a lot of the time. We end up asking ourselves or engaging with stakeholders and saying, doing a five whys methodology. We push left a lot of the time. You know, we're looking and visualizing workflows and asking the stakeholders questions. Why are you doing it this way? A lot of the time we're coming in and people are doing stuff on a daily basis. They don't ever get a chance to step back and evaluate what it is they're doing. So we're looking and saying, hold on, why are you doing it that way? Really, when I talk about push left, it's so much easier to fix something closer to the source than it is at the destination. And it's also cheaper to do so as well. So we tend to work on building Kanban boards that help us and our stakeholders visualize the various processes end to end. It makes it easier for people to do their job with minimal distractions and be aware of what the next most important thing is they need to actually do. When it comes to quality assurance, it's really about ensuring the content is fit for purpose. We tend to focus on trying to prevent false positives. So what's a false positive? Well, it's where we detect something that we actually shouldn't. They can be really damaging to the customer and bring operations to a halt. It can be just as harmful as a valid threat. Imagine we detected a critical file by mistake on a customer's production line and it stopped working because it was deleted.
While Connor's job is all about helping other engineers change and improve their processes, his own job is constantly evolving too.
How is the job changing? It's very much about automating the workflow these days. In my time, I've moved from being a QA individual to being more involved in a team that designs and architects systems that help automate our processes. We're constantly evolving and looking at technologies to help us scale and automate better. With the amount of data we see, we do use platforms and have to use platforms like Elastic and Kibana that helps us collect and visualize trends via dashboards. Of course, we use tools like Docker to help set up our own environments. I find that these days, as opposed to being just coders on a team, we've got to understand the whole stack, full stack essentially, and be a DevOps team.
Okay, that's all we have time for this week. We'd like to say a big thank you to Saeli, Eric, and Connor for taking the time to talk to us and giving us some insights into their jobs. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on your weekly dose of cybersecurity news. You can also follow us on Twitter @ThreatIntel, or on Medium at medium.com/threat-intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, check out our blog, which can be found at semantic.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We'll be back again next week when we'll be once again talking about what's going on in the world of cybersecurity news. Until then, thank you and goodbye.